unannounced changes in the knowledge test question pool. Good idea? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, also now of Bob Miller Flight Training Online, for our weekly Monday safety issues chat. Bob, I'm glad you got away for a few days and got a little rest and relaxation before diving into another series of webinars.
Well, thanks, Paul. I discovered there is sunshine someplace in this continent we call North America, and we found it in a bit of it anyway in Florida, but it was good to get away.
All right. Well, the first thing I want to talk to you today about is something in the March edition of Over the Airwaves. FAA changes airman knowledge test questions without public notice. Bravo. This is something that generated a letter that was sent jointly and co-signed by AOPA and NAFI. And the letter basically complained in its first paragraph, whatever question bank changes were put into effect last week resulted in a dramatic change in the failure rate, more than quadruple the failure rate prior to the switch. Although AOPA and NAFI are not opposed to changes in the test bank, we are opposed to changes in focus areas being made without proper notification to the individuals conducting and receiving training. Now, this can be taken a couple of ways. Obviously, if they changed the requirements of what you have to know in Part 61 to get a pilot's license, that would be one thing. But as I read down the letter here, AOPA and NAFI seem to want a little more advanced knowledge and ability to prepare students than that. Give me your comments on that and what prompted this article in Over the Airwaves.
Well, for a long time, the debate has, you know, raged as to whether or not it's wise to release the question bank from the FAA to the public. And for many years, it was under the Freedom of Information Act. Publishers of review books, GLIME and ASA and others, were able to acquire the actual test questions. And then, I guess about 7 years ago, the FAA stopped a full release of the actual test questions, but there were enough of them out there that it was virtually anybody who had a current review book could memorize questions and memorize answers and get through the test. And when the FAA recently began to change the test questions, people started failing the test. And I think that alone was proof positive that people were not knowing the knowledge required. They were knowing the questions and the answers. And AOPA and NAFI apparently has taken issue with that because it increases what they might call a burden on the students to now go out and actually learn all the material rather than specified pieces of information or material that the FAA heretofore had made public.
If you go to the SAT and copy down questions and bring them out and publish them, you're in big trouble. I don't understand, you know, what the expectation has been here over time.
What I see here, Paul, is not so much an overt desire to get the actual test questions. The publishers of review books have prepared for years books like we in high school used to call Barron's review books or Cliff Notes. You could take a course in Hamlet and then either understand Hamlet, or you could go out to the local drugstore and buy the Hamlet Cliff Notes, 28 pages, read the essentials of what Shakespeare was trying to say and pass the test without ever reading the full play. And that's essentially what the publishers today do. They get the essence of what the FAA is asking and what they're targeting, and then they prepare the review books to match that. Now, when the FAA just recently changed their areas of emphasis, people started failing the tests. And again, as I said earlier, that's evidence, in my opinion, that people were good at reading the review books until the review books no longer, you know, addressed what was being asked. You know, this is not rocket science. You know, the private pilot or the fundamentals of instruction for instructors. This, you know, there's weather questions, there's weight and balance questions, there's aerodynamic questions. In the instructor's handbook, the letter that AOPA and NAFI wrote said, you know, 228 pages is just far too much information. to expect any CFI candidate to know. And I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, I don't remember a textbook either in high school or in college that was less than 228 pages, and I certainly had to know all of that information for each course I took. To expect anything less of a certified flight instructor, he's not expected to know everything in the flight instructor's handbook. That's ludicrous, particularly in light of the horrible safety record that we have.
Well, and flunking geometry won't get you killed.
Yeah, and for an organization like NAFI, you know, I can expect it from AOPA. AOPA is a membership organization. They support their members. But NAFI, National Association of Flight Instructors, whose stated mission is to upgrade and improve the quality of instruction that's going out to the field, and for them to lobby against the FAA, who is trying to come up with a more objective, broad-based testing instrument that assesses a candidate's knowledge of the flight instructor's handbook. I don't know what's motivating them other than pandering to flight instructors to become members. You know, this is ridiculous.
Well, and the paragraph just below the one you mentioned that mentions the 228 pages being overly burdensome says, and I quote, "Flight instructors and test prep providers attempt to provide students with basic target areas to focus on, which will ensure that the students retain the most important lessons." This, to me, says that we're giving up on the idea of having you know all the information.
Very good point, Paul. If there's something in the 228-page flight instructor's handbook that is not important for us as flight instructors to know, then don't put it in the book in the first place. I presume that every paragraph in that 228 pages has some level of importance. It has some influence on the safety or the training standards for the students that we're training. And if NAFI and AOPA is saying, listen, it's not important for us to know all 228 pages, we'll just give you the highlights and we're going to tell you what the FAA is testing, that's a dilution of the system, and it speaks directly to our fatal accident rate. You know, it's a high calling, in my opinion, to be a flight instructor. It's a high calling to be an airline transport rated pilot. It's a high calling to be a pilot. And for our membership organizations to go out there and lobby against the FAA's efforts to come up with a broad-based instrument to really assess what the level of knowledge is. The fact that students are failing these tests recently, according to NAFI and AOPA, is testament to the fact that we're letting candidates get through the system without knowing all of the information. Again, let's just go back to the fatal accident rate as evidence of this. And this has got to stop. And my hat goes off to the FAA on this one. They need to stick to their guns and provide an expectation as enumerated in FAR Part 61 and in the pilot practical test standards, and then hold us as pilot candidates to that high standard. And if we can't do it, then maybe you ought to go out and go into boating or something else.
Well, we'll refer folks to the March edition of Over the Airwaves, and there's a link to the letter there. Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to ask you a question that has nothing to do with anything you put in Over the Airwaves this month. And that is, when we get set to take someone for a ride in an aircraft, let's walk through that thought process. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Piperjet.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Come see what's new at Aspen Avionics during this year's AEA International Convention and Trade Show. Introducing Evolution Synthetic Vision. As an optional expansion to the Evolution Pro primary flight display, Synthetic Vision represents a real-time 3D rendered view of terrain, traffic, and other hazards. Aspen's leading-edge display technology delivers the finest detail rendered views of any glass panel on the market. Available second quarter of 2011. Visit AspenAvionics.com. Aspen Avionics, a new way to look at avionics. Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. And Bob, I want to talk for a moment about the general question, when should we take friends for rides? And I mentioned before the break that this has nothing to do with anything in the current issue of Over the Airwaves, but in a lot of cases, you have presented reports on accidents in which somebody who was not prepared to fly, who was either not proficient, had become rusty, whatever, compounded the tragedy by taking someone with him in the airplane. We have spring coming. We have a bunch of people who haven't flown all winter. Is there a thought process you could walk us through, a mental pilot checklist that helps us decide when should we turn down our friend's request to go for an airplane ride, or when should we just not volunteer it in the first place?
Very good question. Excellent question, Paul. Let's put away for just a moment the skill level of the instructor, whether the skill level of the pilot, the host pilot. Let's disregard that altogether, and whether he's very experienced or a brand new pilot himself. My first consideration is the flight conditions before taking that first timer up in an airplane. I consider myself a fairly proficient, skilled, current pilot, and we do, well, we sold over 300 Discovery flights over the holidays alone. The instruction to my staff, and certainly I abide the same thing, we will not take a Discovery flight customer up on a gusty, windy, low ceiling, poor visibility day. Simply because it's not because I doubt the skills of my flight instructors or myself, but we want that ride to be a very pleasant, enjoyable, hey, I want to do this again type ride. I won't even take my family up, even after many thousands of hours in airplanes with them, if I think the weather's going to be exceedingly bumpy or I won't get them back in the airplane again for weeks or months after an event that might cause them to get sick in the airplane. So my first consideration to answer your question is the flight conditions. They need to be clear, smooth, ideal flying weather before taking that first timer up for a ride.
Okay, assuming that the weather is fine, I know when I got my private pilot license a few years ago, the next weekend there was a pancake breakfast, and I called up my son and said, hey, you want to go fly to this pancake breakfast? And honestly, at that point, I was probably as proficient as I have been in the years since because of all the recent currency. But aside from weather conditions, you know, obviously there are things on a nice day. You can still come into an airport at the end of a cross country and find crosswinds. What should we be preparing for? What should we be checking off before we say, I'm ready to take someone up in 3D?
Well, you know, this question should be asked by every one of us who fly young eagles. And you know as well as I do, there have been several tragedies with young eagles in recent years. There likewise have been some notable tragedies with volunteer pilots flying angel flights, flying sick passengers to medical sites. You know, every time there's an accident like this and a pilot dies, you know, my heart goes out. But it does not go out nearly as hard or nearly as compassionately, I should say, as when an innocent passenger dies in that same aircraft. We as pilots have a word I used earlier, a high calling to above all ensure the safety of our passengers and regard them the same way we would regard our own family members when getting in an airplane. Frankly, you mentioned a pancake breakfast. Man, there are pancake breakfasts I deliberately avoid because I know what's happening out there. I have a fairly good idea of the skill level of the pilots or the lack thereof. The lack of control in the traffic pattern, they're just downright hazardous areas. I won't go into them. Not all pancake breakfasts, but some. So if there's any associated risks that are higher than what might be regarded by us as just normal getting into an airplane, refrain from taking that passenger. Assume that passenger is your grandchild or your own daughter or son. They're no different. If they're a member of the public, the first-time rider, resist the temptation or that demand on the pilot can be rather stiff, particularly when the passenger is insistent. They really want to go, and they're lifting you up among their friends and saying, you're such a great pilot, and let's go have some fun, and I'll pay for the gas, and I'll buy the breakfast. You know, that's a lot of pressure on the pilot. But yet we have to come back to that ultimate safety question. If it's not good enough to take our own family member, then it's not good enough to take a member of the public. I don't know if that answers your question, but...
Well, it's a good start. I hope people think about it, because I have a feeling that this time of year is probably a likely time for a lot of pilots in North America or the Northern Hemisphere in general to be caught up in the rusty skills slash excited to get back out there combination. So, well, Bob, as always, appreciate it. We will talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Paul.
Bob Miller has been my guest. You'll immediately get the March edition of Over the Airwaves by email when you subscribe, which is free, at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.